You are listening to Fanthatrax.
You're listening to Fanthatrax. Flip through the galaxy of literature. Welcome to Cannon Fodder.
You're listening to Cannon Fodder and a very special Star Wars Podcast Day 2024 episode, as I take the great opportunity to sit down with writer Ethan Sachs, who's recently completed his run on Bounty Hunters, to discuss that fantastic title on a special episode of Cannon Fodder.
So you've just finished a 42-issue run on Bounty Hunters. First and foremost, how is that sitting in your head? Because that's quite the undertaking, and now it's done.
Yeah, you know, in this day and age in comics, it's rare, you know, and the entire Star Wars line has made it, you know, this far, 4 years in, and I feel like it's going to be measured as a golden age. You know, I'm Ringo in that supergroup, so like it's not on me. It's definitely on Alyssa, Charles, Greg, and the Googs. But I do. You know, when we started, we had no idea how long it was going to go. And I was naive, and I would have these sort of storylines that I sort of left as threads and no idea if I'd ever get to tie them up. And I've gotten to tie just about all of them up. So that was, I think, the blessed moment. And then also, like, having Paolo back to for the, you know, I call it the Return of the King, you know, sort of postscript, where we had all the you know, to mix my franchise metaphors. But yeah, that was kind of special to sort of bring it full circle. Because the other thing too is to have a writer and artist, you know, I think when all said and done, we had 31 issues together, not counting the 10 page that sort of kicked it all off. And to have that sort of longevity with an artist, a writer and artist, is just, that's unheard of, you know, like that's a long run. So blessed all around.
So when did you kind of get the sense that, because you laid out threads and you kind of knew where you wanted to take it, and of course there's all these other things happening around it, so it's sort of subservient in a sense, like all the books are, to big plot lines coming in and where you're taking the story because of the era that it's set in. But when did you kind of think, you know, I actually might be able to tick all the boxes and pretty much get it all done? When did you kind of think this might just happen?
Well, I probably would have gone on forever if it was just me. But there was like sort of the truth of it all is that, you know, we were telling this combined storyline between Empire and Return. That's 1 year of time. And, you know, we had 4 years worth of stories that we are basically in the span of a few months. And so to, you know, there was a time like we have to move on, and there was sort of an opening with Bounty Hunters at the end of the Dark Droids arc.
Yeah.
But we knew going even a little bit before that was a possibility. Because, you know, there are off ramps. So, like, decisions are made, like, okay, this is a time we can end it kind of thing. And the thing that I asked for that Marvel granted me, which was great, is like, I wanted an extra issue to go out with a bang and to really tie it all together. And you know, because I felt like if it just ends at an arc, a lot is sort of left on the table, and I didn't want that. I wanted to give fans, you know, a proper send off. So they were gracious and they gave me 10 extra pages, which allowed me to have kind of this big action packed story, but then also the sort of the quieter moments to say goodbye. Again, Return of the King. So that was basically how it went down.
It's, to my mind anyway, reading it, and I loved every panel, every page of all of it. So it felt, in the best sense, almost like a soap opera, because you've got these characters that are coming in and going out of each other's lives, and there's the incredible backdrop of Star Wars behind it. So when you did get that chance to wrap it up and not put a bow in it, because you've kind of left a little door open, as all storytellers do, but were you surprised, not surprised that you got the 10 pages, but were you kind of, as you were writing it, thinking, you know, everyone's getting their little step-offs, and everybody's walking away from it, which it was always either going to be, like you say, mixing metaphors, Return of the King, end of Lord of the Rings, when you get that extra bit, or Rogue One, when nobody walks away from it, pretty much. When did you kind of decide that, actually, I think they're all going to move on and do other things?
Well, for the key characters from day one, I knew I wanted to, you know, this is a spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read it, but I knew I wanted to end in a happy ending. Like, I wanted to torture the heck out of them during the course of the series, because a lot of it was sort of my own therapy working through stuff. And the whole book is really steeped in that. We've talked about this before, in trauma and like overcoming it and making mistakes and falling down and getting back up. So I had to traumatize them to get them past it later. So I did, you know, I settled pretty early on in my mind. I don't think I told any of the editors that I wanted the last page of the series to be Valance smiling and holding out his hand to the reader. I didn't know who was going to be on the other end of it, to be frank, until like I knew it wasn't going to be Yura, but like I did want him to have a happy ending and to sort of grow into himself, and but also to reach out to the reader. Like, I wanted it to be like, you know. So that is how I always wanted to end it, pretty much as far back as I can remember. Again, you have no idea how long it's going to last. Like, if they torpedoed it after the first arc, there would be no point in doing that. But as it went on, like, that was definitely what I wanted. I wanted to give him a happy ending. And you know, all the characters, with the possible exception of Bosk, but Bosk will be okay. He's very self-adjusted. So
yes. Yes. And when you worked out and thought through as far out as you can plan it anyway, when you start these things, the thought that you pick up Valance as he is, where he is, not after Solo comes out, when you start writing Bounty Hunters and there's that whole interweaving plot line with Han Solo and all these other elements that are folded in. Did you envisage, I mean, you mentioned the reaching the handout moment, that he has kind of this happy, I keep waggling air quotes, this is a podcast, it doesn't work on a podcast. It's this kind of happy ending, if you want to call it that, a next chapter moment. When did you kind of realize that you really have dug this great storyline, and because he's folded into this Dark Droids thing with the hybrids and the droids, the cyborgs being sort of taken over by the Scourge, it really did fit in beautifully with where Bounty Hunters 42 ended.
So this is a testament to the other writers, especially Charles, and to the editors led by Mark Panicia, Danny, Mikey Basso, Danny Chasm, you know, Alyssa Wong, Greg Pak, and Mark Guggenheim, because we used to do these Zooms together every week. And so it was so coordinated. And, you know, Charles was sort of the architect of the crossovers or the big events, but he was constantly asking, how can we make this work for your book? You know, it was not only like, yeah, you know, here's the event, you figure out what you want. It was not like that at all. You know, like, as an example, for War of the Bounty Hunters, the whole Cadelia storyline, being kidnapped and sort of being groomed to be Kira's protege, you know, to sort of take to have the life that Kira never got to have. That was all him. You know, I had ideas where I wanted to take her eventually. And it's funny. I don't know if I should be telling this or not, but a lot of the, you know, I, like, when I introduced Cadelia, she was going to be in my book longer, but then Mandalorian had Grogu, and we were very conscious of this sort of, you know, lone wolf and cub type relationship. Yeah. If it's going to overlap too much, and then entertain the idea of her coming back in the book. But then Bad Batch came about, and I was like, I just don't want to seem like we're mimicking, you know what I mean? Like, we're just sort of trotting on the same steps. So I told other people, like, I did improv in college, not very well, but I was on the improv team. And one of the things I like about it is you get a suggestion from the audience and you just roll with it, whatever it is. You can't say no, like, you just roll with it. And so, you know, writing Star Wars in a larger universe, as well as within, you know, a larger comics stable, like, you have to sometimes run with thing changes, right? Like, you know, we didn't necessarily anticipate the story. Every part of the story would go a certain way. I knew how I wanted to end some things, you know. But just as an example, the whole Losha's arc changed significantly over the course. You know, one of the things was some editorial wanting to mix up, because there's always a fear, like, I really loved the initial Tonga's crew. Yeah. But there was this feeling like, okay, well, this, you have to shake up the status quo a little bit, you know? And so the idea of writing some of them off And I was very hesitant to write off Losha because I liked the dynamic. And then someone said to me, well, what is Losha's key characteristic other than being Tonga's wife? And that hit me hard. And I was like, I don't see her that way. But then I was like, okay, well, maybe she goes off on her own and is part of the solution later on, but on her own. And then introducing this other crew, then I was like, well, I can, you know, set up this betrayal that kind of, you know, so it's not like I sat down on issue one and knew we're going to go to 42 and this is how it's all going to lay out. But a lot of the arcs, character arcs, I sort of more or less knew what I wanted to do.
This is Charles Soule. You're listening to Fantatrax.
And when you have these other crossovers coming your way, and I guess you kind of, there is a sort of a pattern, War of the Bounty Hunters and Hidden Empire, and then, and how it moved, you kind of knew they were coming to a fairly fixed point. How helpful are they to you? Because I'm sure you could completely have sat and plotted 42 issues and told a story with these characters, and it would have been fascinating. But there's also something kind of cool, because Star Wars is this big sandbox of knowing there's other stuff happening elsewhere. And actually, you can go and read it in Dr. Aphra, or you can go and read it in Star Wars or wherever. So how helpful is that to you as a writer, knowing that there's all these other elements that I guess to a certain degree inform what you're writing, but also you can pick little bits and sort of throw them all in?
Well, like to some extent, it makes it a little harder in that, like, you have to synchronize what's happening with you with what's happening, you know, with your book, with, you know, what's happening elsewhere. That being said, it's a gift because what you're writing matters in a larger context. And that is the great thing about the Star Wars franchise, is every piece is part of this larger whole. So, like, you know, even going to the theme parks in Disney World or Disneyland. Yeah. That is part of the canonical story. So you can feel part of it. You know what I mean? Because you're in that world. And you know, the comics matter. The books matter. The video games matter. You know, and you can come into the franchise wherever you most, you know, feel at home. But there's something for everyone. There's something, you know, that's just being part of that larger whole. And that, you know, when Valance interacts with Chewbacca or Darth Vader or Aphra, you feel like it's not just, oh, this story can happen anywhere, anytime, and any, you know, there is a feeling of it being part of a larger whole. So that's a gift. And that was unique for this golden age of Marvel Star Wars comics, in that all the major comics and the spinoffs and the events happened at the same time.
Yeah.
Every other era of comics, Star Wars comics, have been some great stories, but there might be one character that's a prequel character, and you know, you just didn't have that connection. And I think we kind of rolled with that to produce some, I think, you know, obviously I'm biased, but some great epic stories that spanned all of the books.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark Fantatrax.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
I think it's incredible to think now that Marvel, on its second ownership, if you like, of the Star Wars franchise, has run for as long as that original line did, with just Star Wars and the movie adaptations and, I guess, Star Comics doing ebooks and drawers. So as you say, describing it like a golden age is quite apt, because there's so much going on and your core stuff, it's a bit like having the Mandoverse, isn't it? And then other stuff happening around it. It's quite busy and impactful. When you came on board, was it Age of Rebellion? Was that your first?
Age of Republic special.
Right.
Was a 10-page story with Paolo Villanelli as the artist.
You couldn't have imagined that it would blossom to the point of, I know I'm being a bit self-serving here, but on my review, I said I put this on my Mount Rushmore of Star Wars comics, because I think that has been fantastic. So
I appreciate that. Thank you.
No, pleasure. But now you've moved beyond it and you're onto Django. And I know you can't talk about Django at the moment. Hopefully we'll catch up again in the future and talk a bit more. I mean, I guess it's a palate cleanser, because you've been so into what you're writing with Bounty Hunters, and now you're moving to something kind of different. How has that been, sort of making that adjustment?
You know, I really got the bug writing. It was just one issue. I think it was 37, if my math is correct, where there was part of the Dark Droids sort of a flashback, and Django was involved. And I really liked writing him, because having gotten the chance to write both Django Fett and Boba Fett, I appreciated the differences. You know, I kind of felt like sometimes Django is considered like the second best Fett And it, you know, like the fans love Boba Fett, but what I love about Django is there's a purity to his character, whereas as Boba is so defined by this seismic loss that he had as a as a child, and trying to fill that void or live up to that has created this kind of darker character. And I think Django is sort of a funner or more fun, well, it's fun in a different way, but it's sort of a looser, you know, kind of there's almost like a swashbuckling nature to him. He's less burdened by that kind of darkness that Boba Fett has. And I liked that. Boba Fett is a lot of fun to write, especially in that era where basically Valance can take on anybody except Boba Fett. Keeps getting the short end of that one. But I just liked Django just sort of being, it's sort of more of a fun adventure. But I will say this, there are lots of tendrils, you know, that by the last issue tie in elsewhere. So it isn't like just, oh, this is a self-contained adventure and that's that. There are repercussions.
And has it been interesting because you've moved out of that classic sort of Empire to Jedi era and now you're moving to within the realms of the prequel trilogy and that sort of time period? So how interesting has it been to, I don't know whether you revisit places you've been to in Bounty Hunters, but how interesting is it going to these locations, being in the realms of those characters? You know, because like you say, Django, it took Mace Windu, it took the second greatest Jedi to take out Jango Fett. So Jango, like you say, has this
and
great
if
reputation.
I wonder what would have happened if that jetpack didn't misfire.
Yeah. Right?
Like he was very anticipating much going, and then it didn't happen. And then So anyway, it would have been a longer fight for sure. I had a little bit of this experience with Galaxy's Edge and Halcyon Legacy in that it was sort of jumping eras. And what I love about this particular time that Jango Fett is set, it's actually set before Phantom Menace. And I had one issue of Halcyon Legacy, which was an Orisang in storyline that was also set before Phantom Menace. And I like that because it's a time when there's all the sort of shadowy intrigue that we know where it's going, but the characters don't. And so I kind of like that rich gray period. You know, I'd love to tell more stories in that specific period if it's possible, but I you know, we'll see how Jango Fett does. I mean, they came to me and asked me like, hey, what Star Wars thing would you want to do next? And I pitched.
I was going to ask that. You've certainly earned your spot, if that's the right phrase, but you know, how did that come to you? Yeah, they asked you.
They asked me like, what am I interested in pitching something next? And that was my answer. So.
And was there the temptation, because Django would fit in great with the Carnos gang and with, you know, Tonga's gang, and he would be very much in there. So was there the temptation to go and do something completely over there different? Or did you like the kind of thought of, you've got this fantastic era with these great characters, and wow, I'm curious to see how that would work in this era when there's Jedi everywhere marshalling everything, you know, was that kind of a thought process?
Well, I knew that this was not going to be as much of an ensemble thing. This was going to be, especially because it was four issues. So if it was like Django and Friends, it would have been a different book. You know, he's at heart, he's a solo character, almost like a, not quite like Clint Eastwood in the Man with No Name trilogy, but in the same way, like he just doesn't play as well with others. Yeah. So I felt like I would like to kind of have this solo adventure for this book. I don't want to spoil anything, but there are other people coming and going, including some familiar names. I'm excited to see. And I got to say, like, I've worked with Luke Ross once before. I'm blessed to have worked with a succession of great artists. You know, even when Paolo was off of Bounty Hunters, it was just an incredible succession of, I don't want to call them guest artists because that's not fair, but you know, there was a succession of great artists. You know, so I was very lucky that I can have a mediocre script and they make it look great.
And what's next? I know not everything you do will be Star Wars forever. You're a writer, so there's other things. So what else is on your plate at the moment?
There's a graphic novel I did called Blood Rage with Fico Osseo as the artist. It is fantastic. It's one of the most fun things I've ever worked on. It's based on a board game called Blood Rage, and it's essentially Ragnarok from the human point of view, essentially. That one, Come On is the board game company. I don't know exactly when it's going to come out. I think it's this year. It's been done for a while. And then I have a couple of projects that I'm working on currently that have not been announced. And then literally like four or five that I have pitched, some of which are Star Wars related, others are not. And I don't know for sure what's going to fly. But I'm not done in the world of Star Wars, that's for sure. I don't know what the next project will be or when it will be, but I've gotten a bug, so.
Good. Well, it's a busy time for Star Wars. I mean, with all the stuff, all the movies being announced, all the TV, second seasons and fourth seasons and all sorts of stuff, it couldn't be busier. So it's you mentioned this golden age for comics. It kind of feels like a golden age for Star Wars because there's so much with us now and so much up ahead. It really is a fertile time, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I am one of those fans who just really loves this Disney era in that, like, there is just so much that now matters. Like, I loved a lot of the legends, the stuff that's legends, but it was never canonical. Like, it was supplemental. And if you liked it, but Uncle George was very adamant that his Star Wars was the official. And then all this other stuff was, you know, with the exception, obviously, of the Zahn books. So I think having this turned into this super franchise where, you know, Andor exists and the comic line exists and all this kind of stuff. It's just, and the animated series feed into, you know, like there's an Ahsoka live action series after watching Clone Wars and Rebels. And like, you get these characters in live action now. I mean, it is a golden time. It really is. You know, I'm of age because I saw the original Star Wars in the theater as a 4-year-old, where I had to wait 16 years, not counting the droids cartoon or whatever. But like, I had to wait 16 years, you know, from the end of Return of the Jedi to getting another Star Wars movie. And so, you know, my daughter's generation just does not know what it's like to wait 3 years to find out what happened to Han Solo, you know? So just from that. And then also, like, I have Disney Plus, I have Blu-rays, I can pop in. Like, I used to, back when I was a child, have to go to Revival. There was these things called Revival movie theaters. And so Star Wars would play every so often, and I would force my parents to take me, even though I'd seen it so many times. But that was how I saw it. And even when the VHS came out, we had one, I don't remember getting it for a number of years because it was so prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a golden age.
Hey, it's Alyssa Wong, writer of Dr. Aphra, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
And final question before I let you go. And this is a hypothetical. And I want you to put your thinking cap on. You're wearing a cap already, but thinking cap on.
I'm wearing a baseball cap, yes. That'll have to do.
So, Disney Plus says, we want to make Bounty Hunters into a TV series. And they cast all the other characters, but they don't know who to cast as Valance. Who would your choice be?
I have an easy answer. I have one choice, and I'm going to put it in my contract. Carl Urban. I've thought long and hard about it. Wow. I know he's sort of aging out, but you know, CGI technology can get rid of some of the wrinkles. I just think the personality to do it, you know, he can do the seriousness with Dredd. He can do the slight ridiculousness. He has that comedy chops. I just think he's perfect. I've gotten into some jousting matches on social media with a segment of Valance Nation that really wants Henry Cavill. So I disagree. Like, I have Henry down for Dengar.
I'm totally with you on Carl Urban, as long as he doesn't bring his Billy Butcher accent with him, because that is, as an Englishman, I'm offended by that. But
fair
otherwise,
enough. Well, he's going to have to do a mediocre American accent. So, but you know,
it's doable.
He did it in that other space franchise. So
that's true.
He was great.
He was great. Yeah. We can't finish this conversation talking about Star Trek. Have you got any conventions coming up this year? You got any events lined up?
I mean, not till New York Comic Con as of now. I always go to Star Wars Celebration, New York Comic Con, and then occasionally go to other ones. I should get in the habit of doing more, but for now, that's it. But I am planning to go to Star Wars Celebration Tokyo next year.
Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Happy Star Wars Podcast Day.
Thank you for joining us for this special edition of Cannon Fodder. For more Star Wars podcast content, be sure to subscribe to Fanthatrax Radio on your podcatcher of choice. Subscribe to all our social media at links.fanthatrax.com. Be sure to be checking out fanthatrax.com daily for all your latest Star Wars news. And you can also join us live on YouTube for Good Morning Tatooine every Sunday evening at youtube.com/FanthatraxTV.
Coming up next on Fanthatrax Radio, it's Making Tracks.